Well, good morning to you all. I'm assuming that for the most part, this is a room full of administrators either in the saddle or going to be, for the most part. I know that there may be some exceptions. We're going to think together about specifically about the team aspect of leading a group. So that's what we're going to think together about. Now, I generally, when I think of, or when people think of a school team, they think of an administrator, might be a principal or something like that, and then part of his team, teacher one, teacher two, teacher three. That's kind of the way we envision the team. There's a leader, and then there's the people that are working for the leader. So we might could even think of this as a bit of a triangle, and the administrator is at the top of that. But the way we actually visualize the team is significant for us. So I read this familiar passage from Luke 22. It says, a dispute also arose among the disciples as to which of them was to be regarded as the greatest, as the most significant, the top dog. And he said to them, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those in authority over them are called benefactors, but not so with you. Rather, let the greatest among you become as the youngest and the servant and the leader as one who serves. For who is the greater, one who reclines at the table or who serves? Is it not the one who reclines at the table? But I'm among you as one who serves. And so Jesus gives us something of the different model, and some have called it the inverted triangle, with the leader at the bottom serving the members of the team. Now, I grew up I was born in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And when I was 7, my dad and mom were asked to move to South Carolina to start a church there. And one of the things that Dad did was to say, I'm willing to do this, but I need someone to go with us. And he said, I'd like somebody that has children the same age as my children. If I'm going to go, I really want some playmates for my children. Well, so the church, they evaluated, and they asked an uncle of mine. His name was Enos Heatwell. And so my dad, my family, Uncle Enos's family, moved to South Carolina. Dad was he's an ordained bishop, but as a leader, he's a reluctant leader. He leads because he's asked to lead. It's not because there's a whole lot of ambition in him. In fact, if you would ask him, for his 20-year plan for the church, he'd struggle there a bit to have much to say. My Uncle Enos, who passed away last year, on the other hand, was just a visionary at the top. He had all kinds of ideas about the way things ought to be. He was ordained as a deacon in our congregation. And so the team, the leadership team for quite a while, would have been my dad and Uncle Enos. Perhaps one of the best ways for you to get something of the picture here would be just to tell you about a typical morning. So we'd be sitting around the breakfast table, the phone would ring, And my dad would get it, and the conversation invariably would go something like this, where my dad would be saying, "Yeah, I've been thinking about that, but no, I didn't talk to so and so yet. No, on that, I didn't get that done." Now, I'm putting my dad in a bad light, because dad is someone who gets things done, but he's a people person. Dad's one who shepherds. He's one who just cares deeply about people and is sensitive to how people are thinking and feeling, and he wants to guide and lead in a way that people are brought with him. And so when Uncle Enos would call, you know, and he had this list of all kinds of things that they needed to be doing and getting done, and things need to happen. Dad wasn't as quick on the draw. But you know, what I saw over the years were two men who learned to be a really phenomenal team. Even though they brought considerably different personalities to the table, they learned how to defer to each other, brought just, I think, amazing strength to the community there in Barnwell, South Carolina, that has just produced a lot of fruit for 30, 40 years. Team. Now, if I were to try to visualize their relationship and the way they were doing team, and by the way, with time, there were several others that joined that as a leadership team, I'd say it looked something kind of like this. Dad would feel pretty uncomfortable with this diagram, even though it's sometimes used as the servant leader model. I think maybe this is a little bit more of the relationship they had, and that the leader is somewhere along here, but there are other members of the team. They bring their strengths and weaknesses, and they learn the process of give and take. It's not really the one at the top, not necessarily even seeing himself as some extraordinary servant, but one of the group. So three different ways to visualize this thing of team. Now, what we want to do today is spend a little bit of time thinking about visualizing team. And then I want to talk about two of the habits that are just absolutely foundational for team. So with that, we will proceed. First of all, what about a vision, visualizing the team? Well, some have suggested that there's basically three kinds of teams. And the first one maybe we can think of as baseball. You know, in a baseball team, what you have nine players that have very specialized roles. So specialized roles. By that, you have the pitcher, the catcher. The skills are different for that. You have a person playing first base, which is different skills than the person playing shortstop. Very specialized roles. And those roles are exercised independently for the most part. So the pitcher winds up and does his thing. The catcher does his thing. There's some interaction there when the shortstop throws to first base. But it's a lot of independent activity. So the team is something. Each person has a unique role, but they're exercised independently. The next kind of team could maybe be illustrated with as a relay team, passing the baton. So there's a team that has to work together to accomplish the goal. In this case, the team is made up of people that have the same role. Every one of the runners basically needs the same kinds of skills. But once again, the exercise of those skills is basically independent. You have the handoff, but there's not, it's not like they're working simultaneously. The third kind, and maybe another example of this would be like doubles tennis. And so everybody's doing the same thing, but one does it for a bit and then the other does it, so on. The third kind of team we could draw as a football. So you have a football team, 11 players. Here we again have specialized roles. The wide receiver and the quarterback need significantly different skills. And in this case, there is a high level of dependence. So when the play gets started, everybody is interacting. You have to learn how to do your role along with everyone else. Now, what kind of team is your administrator-teacher team? What kind of team should it be, or would you like for it to be? Wouldn't mind just pausing here now and having some interaction. As you visualize three kind of approaches to team, what would you like for the way you and your teachers would interact? And you could use maybe either this set of three or this set of three to think about it.
In the football model.
That's the one that's attractive to you?
I'm not very skilled at teaching people how to read.
Okay.
And, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That sort of thing.
Okay. Who else?
I would see a blending of the three between the traditional, the serving, and the circular. I'm not sure if that's possible, but a working together as a circular, yet when there's work to be done, if the administrator is willing to be the one getting it dirty, but yet if there's responsibility that needs to be taken to make something happen, that you take the role of the traditional administrator to make it happen. I'm not sure if that's possible to blend the three, but I think so.
You're saying there's a time in which you need someone to be decisive and to take responsibility for what's happening. And that looks more like the traditional model. Does it ever feel to you like what's happening in school is that everybody's off in their rooms doing their own thing, and that you occasionally come together and have a meeting maybe, but that's really the only point of connection? Maybe that's where the baton is kind of passed around a little bit, but for the most part, it's very independent what's going on in the team. What would it look like to actually... And I'm not suggesting that this is the model that ought to be in play in our schools, but I'm saying it's at least worth considering. What would it look like for there to be the level of dependence as in football on a teaching staff?
Well,
And is that, would that be a good thing? Would that be a healthy thing? I raise some of these questions just to get us maybe re-envisioning again, thinking again about how we could interact as a staff in ways that are life-giving and compelling and enjoyable. Well, let's keep going. As we're continuing to visualize what a team is, perhaps we should spend a little bit of time thinking about the characteristics of effective teams. And you help me out here. Give me, as you think about a team that's really functioning well, and perhaps specifically an administrator-teacher team, what are the characteristics of that team?
Trust.
Trust. You want to talk about that? Yeah. Okay, they trust each other. There is a sense of, I can depend on the other people on the team. Mark, you want to comment on how that is developed? I know it's not exactly the subject here, but... Okay. So actually the way we do school kind of militates against the development of that somewhat. We don't have enough time to hardly develop trust. Okay. What other characteristics?
Relationship.
Can you talk about that a little bit more? What kind of relationship?
I guess I'll piggyback on what he said about, you know, we need to know each other.
Mm-hmm. There really needs to be a sense of enjoying each other. But what if you just don't? We'll leave that one for the next session. Okay, what else?
Communication.
So the teams are talking. What else do you have in mind there? Okay, good. So having confidence in each other, enjoying each other, understanding each other. We have a lot of relational kinds of words here to describe the team. Can we push beyond that a little bit? What else? I mean, at this point, we're describing this. Is there anything else that an effective team does? What's that? Okay, yeah, if we were talking about a football team and they trusted each other and they enjoyed playing with each other and they really understood each other, but they couldn't play football or they could never win, it would not be considered an effective team. So there needs to be a, we could say a variety of things here perhaps, but what if we would say... A focus on the goal. And every game has its own goal. So that means knowing what the goal is, knowing what it is this team is about, what the goal of the team is, and focusing on accomplishing that goal. That means you're going to have to actually figure that out. That's a conversation that I find not all schools actually have had. What the goal is. What are we doing here? Why are we spending $150,000 of our patrons' money operating this school? What are we doing? Okay, so focus on goals. What else?
Every member of the team needs to accept responsibility for their actions. Thinking of a football game or something, every person accepts responsibility for what they did. In the team of teachers, each teacher accepts the responsibility of their classroom and are accountable to the other teachers.
Let's just summarize. I was saying mutual accountability. Effective teams are going to hold each other responsible for the goals of the team. Good. Anything else you want to say here?
That there is completely mutual accountability? Are administrators accountable to teachers in the same way that teachers are accountable to principals? Or
okay.
Who are administrators accountable to?
Yeah. Good. Do you wanna make a stab at your own question or?
I think it's healthy for there to be that between teacher and administrator for it to be mutual. Faith is probably going to be an element to the board as well.
So that's right.
And patrons, that's going to be a little different thing.
So you're saying mutual accountability, but there will be other forms of accountability. Basically, we have the teaching team, which is include the administrator and the teachers, but you can also have additional teams that connect here. So there's the board. I don't know if we think of the parents as a team necessarily, but teachers are going to be accountable to parents. So there's other levels of accountability in here. And I think this is definitely one that needs to be in place, that I don't see myself as an administrator as only accountable to the board. I'm also accountable to the people I'm directly working with. You mean invite from other teachers? Okay. Somebody want to comment there? I don't know if you have to formally ask for it, but if we actually bring our stuff, the challenges that we have to the group, if we are making commitments to the group, there will be accountability if we're open about those kinds of things. The group, I think, that's going to invite accountability, indirectly, if not directly. I want to put two other characteristics up here, and there'd be quite a few that we could put, but maybe these are some we don't think about a whole lot. Effective teams disagree. Effective teams are not clones. Are not made of clones. Effective teams are ones that find how to bring their differences together. That's your disagreements. And make it work. Okay, so let's just say it. If you're going to be an effective team, there's going to be disagreement there. I'm not saying unhealthy or paralyzing disagreement. But there's going to be disagreement. And perhaps one of our jobs as administrators is to learn how to invite that. Who was it? I was just reading about somebody recently, and they said this person has 100 new ideas every day, one of which is good. Well, maybe that's kind of the way you might be as an administrator. Lots of new ideas. The fact is, the people in your team are not going to think that. We have to really be okay with a lot of our ideas hitting the trash pile. It's par for the course. And Then here's another one. Effective teams pay attention to their spouses. Now that one may feel like an odd one on this list too. And when I say spouses, I don't just mean the administrator's spouse, assuming the administrator has one, but the spouses of anybody else on the team. It comes as no surprise to any of us to know that some really good teams have been undermined by the spouses. And that includes some school teams. You want to pay attention here. It's you want to think about how the spouses can be a part of the team, and at least on some level, be how you can give them ownership, buy-in to the goals of the team, so that there isn't just this, the team is seen as something that the wives have to constantly fight against. Okay, any comments or questions on any of these at this point? Now, so we spend a little bit of time visualizing some different kinds of teams, visualizing how a healthy team might look. And I'd like for us yet to spend some time thinking about the strengths or why a team can be an incredible blessing rather than just a whole bunch of soloists. And so in order to do that, I've included here a bit of an exercise that teams can do together. We've not done this a lot here, but it begins to give you a framework for thinking about the different strengths that a team can bring to the table. It's called DeBono's Six Hats of Evaluation, and you'll notice that there are six different colors of hats. And the way this works is that you go ahead and give your team, you assign a different color to the team. Actually, let's just do that here. I'm going to pass out these hats totally at random. So I don't know if this is going to fit your personality or not, but we will see. Okay, those of you with a hat, you are now the new administrative team. And here's going to be the issue. Someone on the team has said that they think we should, as a teaching staff, we ought to spend more time doing things outside of school together, outside of our work. So we don't have enough relationship except our work relationship. So that's the question on the floor. What could we do to relate better to each other? Okay? So maybe I should get that up here as a help to Mr. Blue. The question is, how can we develop a relationship outside of work? Now, someone else has proposed that we take a one-day field trip. So that's the proposal. And the way this exercise works is that each person takes their turn in commenting on that proposal. The person with the blue hat is the process coordinator. He's the one that just makes sure that people have their turn and their voice is heard. And so he would begin the conversation and then would make sure it keeps going around. And then you also notice at the end, he summarizes what has been heard, and then the red gets the last word. The red represents emotions and feelings. And just, this is the person who just vents, right? You know. It's the intuitive response. It doesn't have to be logical. It's almost preferable if it isn't. It's just, this is what I feel, okay? The yellow sees everything positively. And so the proposal, very, very positive about it. The black sees everything negatively. And so immediately comes up with two or three reasons why. It's a horrible idea. The white just gives some objective information that would help to answer the question. The green says, okay, yeah, but you know, here would be three other ways to answer the question as well. The blue then summarizes. The red gets that last word with the intuited response. Okay? So, let's try it quickly. Limit your responses here to a minute or less. And I'm going to turn things over to Mr. Blue.
Okay, well, you see what the question is. Obviously, we need more relationship. That'd be a good idea. And so it'd be good to have each of you share what you think. Maybe let's take them in the order they are. Red, yellow, black, white, green. Give your opinion of what you think. The proposal is to take a field day trip. Does this sound like a good idea to you to help our relationship as a team?
I just have a sinking feeling it's not a busy week. I just don't have time for it.
Okay.
It's a great idea. Let's go. Let's do it.
All right.
What could be a downside to it?
Thinking about that, would there be where would we go with something like that? Could we afford something like that? And we all have busy schedules already. You know, would there be a way that we could fit this in that it wouldn't take away from our students?
Sure, if I embrace the vision of the one-day field trip, maybe there are ways that we could work together as school to make sure that our paths are crossing more. Maybe there are things that we're doing independently that we could team up with more. Maybe there are ways that we could do work for each other, or maybe our loads are too big. Maybe there'd be ways that we could invite the community to be involved in volunteer ways, things that are taking our time so that we can have more time to focus on relationship as a team. All good thoughts. Good ways of looking at it. Mr. Red, I guess, what's your response? I'm looking at the whole thing.
Well, I sense there's some interest, and I think most of us at least want to do something. See, I'm summarizing it now. I can get excited about it. How about you all come over for our house? Our house, we'll have supper out back tomorrow night. Something like that work?
Okay, thank you. Do you have a yellow, a black on your team? Sometimes we think of certain kinds of personalities as problematic for the team. Part of this exercise is to begin to see that, you know, this brings a tremendous amount of strength when you have these different viewpoints represented. And so instead of actually trying to minimize, let's hear. And this, one of the neat things about this approach, and by the way, you can buy these colored hats on Amazon for $3 or something, but what you can do is use it to force people to actually take a little different role than maybe what they ordinarily would, and to start thinking about issues and questions that you're wrestling with as a teaching team from a variety of perspectives. But the big thing I want us to see here is that there's strength in this process, not, I just wish we all just completely agreed. When you can actually walk through this, you're going to wind up with conclusions that are better than if everybody just signs off right away with whatever you're proposing. Comments here. Okay. So we've spent some time developing the vision, kind of visualizing what team can be. What are the habits of team? We get a lot of snide remarks about meetings, and perhaps appropriately so. But that is one of the primary habits of a school team, our meetings. You cannot minimize the need for exercising this habit. So let's talk about meetings for a while. And first of all, I want us to think about the kinds of meetings or the types of meetings that we ought to be thinking about as we lead our team. So we need to schedule different types of meetings. And I'm going to give you a rather daunting list here. The first one, we'll keep, this one's intended to keep it relaxed. But first type of meeting, we'll just call socials. These are times when you can be relaxed, when you can just have fun together as a group. A second kind of meeting it's good to have, I'm going to call check-ins. These are briefings, short meetings just to keep everybody on the same page. These can often happen informally, but they're vital. In a lot of schools, they kind of just happen naturally first thing in the morning. But depending on the geography of your school, if teachers are really spread out, it may not happen naturally. And you may have to be intentional about something here. Third kind of meeting are tactical meetings. Check-ins, I'm going to put daily here, not that they actually have to happen daily, but that gives you the feel of a check-in meeting. Tactical meetings are generally ones that we have weekly. These are meetings that respond to the immediate issues of what's going on. A student issue comes up, some kind of response that we have to make to this person or that parent. That's what you deal with in tactical meetings. These are the two that most teams know they have to have, and they do to some extent. But in a lot of ways, these are not the most important meetings for a team. Fourth one, planning meetings. These are the ones where maybe at the beginning of the year, where you're looking at the big picture. These generally need to be longer, several hours, in some cases several days in length. similar kind of meeting. If this is at the beginning of something, at the end of things, evaluation meetings. And I'll just tell you, I love planning meetings, and I find these a trial. I tend to, you know, looking forward. And so to look back is something I have to discipline myself to do. I'm trying to learn that. Gerald back there will tell you that I still have a ways to go. But evaluation, and again, these will not happen every week. They need to be longer, where there's adequate time to actually sit in and feel and discover the lessons of what has happened. The two can often be combined a bit, where your evaluation then is used to make plans for the next one. A sixth kind of meeting, and this begins to overlap perhaps just a little bit, but it's still worth thinking about, and that's off-site meetings. I don't know how many schools do this. We do it here on the institute level, where the leadership team just goes away for a day. And there's something really good about being disconnected from the kind of the environment that you're used to, and that everybody can go off and check their this and that and still have responsibility for this other thing. You get away from all that, and you just sit together, and you talk for several hours. So off-site meetings. This is something that you wouldn't do more than once a year, probably, but could be of value there. And then seven, I'm going to call these special meetings. These are not ones that are planned necessarily, or they're not regular. Everything else to this point could be regular. Even an off-site meeting, you'd say every year we're going to do something off-site. Special meetings are ones that kind of come up as a need arises. Two different kinds of special meetings that I'd lay out there. One would be crisis meetings. You know about those. Something comes up and you got to do something. So the team has to gather outside of your normal time. So crisis meetings. On the positive side, though, big picture. Let's call them big picture meetings. Every once in a while, an opportunity comes along that you say, you know, we need to give some time to really looking at this. Here is an opportunity, a big picture that we could look at. Let me give an example or two. Last or 2 years ago, there was some turnover on our board, and there had been a shift in the leadership team here. And we were just feeling a real need to consolidate once again our understanding of our mission as a school. What are we about? Who do we serve? What are our values? And so we wound up calling a special weekend retreat that involved our board and leadership team here, as well as our wives, for part of that. And we spent from Friday evening through Sunday afternoon just wrestling with those questions. What is our mission? What do we value? And who do we serve? And we spent hours and hours and hours on those three questions. Did a lot of homework in advance, surveyed all of our staff, a lot of things to come together. And out of that has come some language that is forming us and shaping us. Another example was this was probably 10, 15 years ago when Faith Builders did not have much language at all about things. And we felt we needed a philosophy of education. So once again, we call it a special weekend retreat meetings. And number went off, and we talked and talked and talked and talked and had supper and with our wives and just and had some worship times. Really, it was a significant time for us. So, some special meetings. Any comments, questions here on types of meetings that we ought to be thinking about as team leaders? And I see some of you saying, boy, we already have enough to do. What's with this? Well, not only do we need to think about the types of meetings we need to have, we need to think about how do we run a meeting in a way that's effective, that accomplishes something. And so I want to talk about that. But first of all, Gerald, you're back here. I'd like, if you would, just describe, maybe as a way to summarize some of this, just describe something of the schedule you use for meetings with your team in the course of a year. I know.
Standpoint of the teacher, from a classroom standpoint, okay, as a teacher, and then as a school, how do we do from the person's perspective? And so that actually takes quite a while. And then that we move from that into planning meetings. We plan our school theme. We plan a number of things in May, okay, after school. After school's out, people have energy. I find we're still thinking school, but we don't have demand of tomorrow or the next hour. We have space, so we often go down to a little hole-in-the-wall restaurant in Townville here, eat extended brunch, spend 2-3 hours there, that kind of thing. I find those days, we spend 2.5 days, 7 hours each day in meetings, planning out things for the coming year. I find actually those, the May and August meetings, would be the most significant.
There you go.
In the school life that we probably do. And it sounds like a hideous amount of time. But I have to show you my agendas, for instance. Hmm. We hardly ever get through everything.
Okay, good. Thank you. Leading effective meetings. Split this into three parts: before the meeting, during the meeting, and after the meeting. And the words I would give for before, three words. You've heard this before, prepare, except it's generally location, location, location. This is prepare, prepare, prepare. A rule of thumb, on average, a 1-to-1 ratio. An hour meeting requires an hour of preparation. That's on average. In some cases, an hour meeting might require 5 hours of preparation. Good meetings don't just happen. They require a lot of work. So I'm not going to write these up here, but I'm going to give you some suggestions about the preparation. Think about the meetings before the meeting. Sometimes there needs to be meetings that happen before the meeting. If you talk to this person and this person and got some ideas, it would facilitate the meeting considerably. Okay, so think about what other meeting, who do you need to talk to before the meeting? Secondly, think about what proposals need to be put on the table. And this is a touchy one, because but on the one hand, you can waste an awful lot of time bringing a question to the table. Hey, somebody said we need to spend more time as a staff, you know, outside of our work. What could we do? That open-ended question can lead you 100 different directions and can occupy the entire meeting. Whereas if you had a proposal to put out there, that can focus the discussion. Now, the downside, though, is that it may focus it more than it should. And as an administrator, making proposals gives you a tremendous amount of influence and leverage, and sometimes you should avoid that. You should go in open-ended. But and that's where it's going to be some judgment calls as to when do we need a proposal? Here's a way to here's the problem. Here's a way to solve the problem. What do you think? Rather than just saying here's the problem, how could we solve it? So possibly have some proposals. Ask yourself the question: what data is needed to make a decision? If you're dealing with when do we schedule a particular event? Well, what are you going to need? You're going to need calendars. So have copies of the calendar so that people, you know, we can check right there and make a decision. Another way to prepare is to email asking the rest of the team for agenda items. It's if you are a team, everyone should have a chance to maybe bring things up for discussion. So, but do that in advance. In your preparation, ask, what are the tough issues we need to wrestle with? What are the tough issues? Don't avoid the tough issues. In fact, the more we can just get them on the table as soon as they arise, it often takes the venom out of things. But it's when we kind of push them back, avoid them, that they grow into something that's problematic. Okay. During a meeting, effective meetings, the word I would give here is to facilitate discussion or interaction. The purpose of a meeting is generally, depending on what kind of, if it's a briefing, then it is a presentation. But most of your planning meetings, tactical meetings, and so on, they're not a chance for you to sell an agenda. They're a chance for the team to come together on something. And so your role is not to deliver and make the case for and then take a vote. It is to lay out a problem, perhaps lay out a proposal, but then let the team wrestle with that. And one of the things that's really, it's been difficult for me in making the transition from someone who is on the team to someone who is leading the team, is that I have to now set on my opinions a lot more than I did before. My role is now to find out what everybody else thinks, not to get my ideas on the table. And that's a shift, because I have these ideas and this needs to be heard, folks. but to set on that, to facilitate the interaction of the group. Okay, some things here. During the meeting, we really do need to keep time commitments. If the meeting is to be over at 3 o'clock, it's not that you can never go over. But when it comes 3, you at least ought to make sure that people have the freedom to leave if necessary, or that they give, that the group gives permission to continue on. You don't just assume that it's okay. So keeping time commitments. Another thing, and I didn't quite know where to put this. This is maybe kind of overarching. But during a meeting, I think the leader's part of their responsibility is to integrate a Christ-centered focus for that meeting. there's no one else that can quite do that like the leader can. So calling for prayer, maybe having devotionals, appropriate times, but keeping, trying from time to time to call it back to this is a chance for us not just to hear each other's opinions, but to actually hear from God and to be under the leadership of God in this. Third, I would say it's important to go over agendas at the beginning of the meeting. I don't know, I get very frustrated if I'm in a meeting or something where I have no idea what the end point is. I don't know if this agenda, if there's still 10 more things on the agenda, and we only have 5 minutes left, but if I can kind of see where we have to go, then that engages me a lot more. So go over the agenda at the beginning. Listen carefully. Refrain from giving your own opinion. Mentioned that one. Here's another responsibility for effective meetings that the leader has, and that is insist on conclusions. Some meetings get to be a lot of fun, and everybody's just enjoying their ideas, and they talk, and that inspires somebody else, and you just, it's great stuff, but it's not coming to a conclusion. Your role is just jump in and say, okay, where are we headed here with this? So insist on conclusions, and then along with that, clarify who's responsible for what. Okay, so Kendall, you've agreed to actually contact these two places that we're going to check into for our field trip. And Mark, you're going to see about transportation. So just clarifying who's responsible for what. And we're going to have to go on. What about after? After the meeting. Two words again, pay attention. This is the time after meetings. It's not, okay, that's all gone. What do we do in paying attention? We encourage the people that are on the team. So the meeting's over, but there's things that are coming out of that meeting. As we're interacting, we encourage each other in the things that maybe we're responsible for. We hold each other accountable for execution. Let's see, did this happen yet? And then maybe one other thing, it doesn't quite fit here exactly, but I'll just offer this, that as leaders, there really is a place to deflect credit and take blame. So we've worked together as a team, but, you know, as the team functions, as it executes, sometimes that produces a lot of praise and gratitude. And part of our role as the team leader is to be sure that that gets deflected to the team. Also, there are times in which we blow it. And that's where it is appropriate for the leader to assume that. And maybe to a greater degree than anyone else. Okay? Just a few things on effective meetings. Anything you want to say here before we're going to have to wrap it up? Or ask? Don't have much time here, so the second habit that I wanted to mention is communicating. So we meet and we communicate. Two habits that just needs to permeate the life of a team. And here's just a little tip along the line of communication. I think it's healthy when teams talk about we rather than I. That's a simple thing, but it communicates a tremendous amount. Not I as administrator, but we as the teaching team here. Be intentional about communication. We gave a list of meeting types. We could make a list of communication types. One of the things that our team does here, it's sporadic at times, perhaps. I'm not sure how. I don't know how faithful we actually are, but we actually alert each other when we leave campus. We just email the group and saying, heading to the doctor or something like that. And it's a way just to stay in touch, a way to communicate. So there's those kinds of communications. There is the communication, and here's a very important one, and that is the communication outside of teams. And it's your responsibility as administrator. So if this is the teaching team, we also have the team. There's the board. There are parents, students, and there is communications that needs to be made from this team to all of those, and it's the administrator's role to facilitate those communications. So the communications outside the team. A lot more could be said there. I would like to end by calling us again to see our role as administrators as serving the team. It's not dictating to the team. It's not selling an agenda. It's serving the team. And one of the best things we can do along that line is to help each member to find the place, the roles in which they can function most effectively. It is an exciting opportunity that you and I have to actually help people get situated in places where they can be wildly successful at what they do. It's problematic when you ask a quarterback to be a tackle on a football team. But when you get that right person quarterbacking, it's exciting what he can do. And that's part of our responsibility as a team leader, is to assess, to be watching for, what is it that each person on my team does really well, and to give them opportunities to explore those and to develop in those areas. Okay, I think we're supposed to be back in at 11:15, and so there's a little bit of time left. You are anything you want to say or ask before we completely close here?
One question I had was one-on-one meetings.
Yes.
Oh.
Somebody want to comment on that?
I think that's effective, especially in teacher performance.
Evaluations, or
right.
Yeah.
One thing that I do is, and I tell my teachers, is that your computer is open.
Good. Yes.
What about the team evaluating each other, as in teachers maybe filling out a written evaluation on each other's performance? Is that healthy?
We do some of that here. The whole thing of evaluation and assessment is a huge topic. And I would just offer this, that the focus of evaluation should not be to find areas that are problematic. It should be to find areas where this person is gifted and is just really... Now, and when that can be the focus, you can actually deal with some problematic things without that much stress. But if it's all about, we got to find something to work on, and Brother Mark here, it really poisons the whole process. And I would offer the same thing then in response to your question. When you're doing it, if that's kind of the focus in a group, it can be much better than the spiraling down of groups people will hate it. We're going there to get slaughtered is the way they start talking about these kind of things. So I think there is a place for it, but you got to control it.
Thank you.
Back to your question, Kendall. I guess my sense would be that the one-on-one, in addition to some assessment things, would be maybe more of a check-in kind of thing, where the administrator walks around and just checks in on a regular basis. It's not a formal meeting. It's just, how's it going? That kind of thing can be very good. Okay? Right.
And your tactical meetings, you do planning, you go back and just say, hey, how is it going from what we decided?
Exactly.
And it helps you to know what's happening in the classroom if you're not there.
That's right. Anyone else? Okay, you're dismissed.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.